So tonight I'd like to explore more deeply what the implications of what we're doing here and what is this being here and what's the problem and what's the possibilities. And I have to say, I want to start with a Buddhist oriented direction, not because it's the only one. There isn't a spiritual journey, at least that I know of, that doesn't go to the same place. Da Atzmenu, the same place, which is knowing us, our birth in a body, our journey, and the limited view. If we stay with that limited view, the price we pay, and if we dissolve that limited view of me and the world and what I want and Bali, low Bali, and that's my life and that's it and that's the struggle and that's the suffering and there's nothing else, that limited view, every spiritual path breaks it open and invites a much bigger sacred insight, whether it's through prayer, meditation, shamanism, ecstasy, tantra, wherever you go. But it's all going to be in the same direction. But we're here with a kind of a consensus that, at least for this retreat, it's a Buddhist retreat, and that's fine. So this is what's on the table, shall we say. And so I want to a little bit start with that. So the first talk of the Buddha after awakening was about anicca, arayut, the transience, the passing nature, that nothing is fixed. And his five friends that were with him on the journey in the first 7 years, that were rather pissed off with him because he stopped fasting to death, more or less, and he drank some milk and he ate something, and he said, I can't be enlightened if I'm nearly dead. It takes a live person to awaken. So and his friends were pissed off with him. They said, you failed. But then he gave the talk and they were enlightened. The second talk was on the self, and it's called Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, the sutta of the self and the non-self, teachings on the self. And the second talk really looked at experience and said, if you take experience to pieces, very hard to find a person there. And it's a little bit logical because it sort of says each part of an experience cannot have in it, cannot be the self. The self is a kind of a collection of our experience. We gather the pieces of the experience, perceptions, the ears, the eyes, the thought, the mind, the understanding, the history, the biography, the memory of all the makot we got from our parents, and all of that put together becomes a self. And if we take all that to pieces, where are we? What is it? It's like I joked before, but when I was about 7 years old, or 8 years old, I asked my father, who was really trying to form me into a Jewish package, Orthodox, and I said, tell me which finger is Jewish. Where is the Jewishness? In which finger? I already had the intuition that there's something doesn't work here. And the Buddha said that thought, is every from the first talk, if everything is flowing and passing, where is me? How can there be a something? Because everything is passing, so where am I in that? How can I be there in that? Because me is something there, a thing. But everything is passing. Where is the me in that? And the question of, if I existed, I could control what happens to me. If a thought was mine, why can't I stop it? Why can't I control it? If a pain in the body was mine, why can't I change it to become pleasure? And it's a real, you know, you could say philosophical in the sense, yes, but I think in the original meaning of the word, the Greek meaning of philosophy is philosophia, loving wisdom. It's of that kind. It's not philosophy for the sake of just loops in the mind. Loving wisdom is questions. Why can't I control my thoughts? If there's suffering because things pass, aging, changing, happiness and then unhappiness, 1 minute this, 1 minute that. So I can't stop, it's suffering, so where am I? Why do I can't be there if that's what's happening. I can't control anything here. And so in the end of the talk, he says, you know, if you look at this carefully, that the fact that experience is in pieces and so on, you will let go of the belief in me as a solid, permanent thing, separate from the world, an awakening will happen. It's important for one other reason, and that is that there is a sacredness to the teaching. In the Buddhist world, this is not technical, and I try to show it by saying how much it's the center of all spiritual paths and maybe all religions. If you're talking about prayer to God, prayer. But it's hidden, it's underneath, it's in the... It's sacred. In the Buddhist world, this teaching is not just technical. So I do want to move us out of that place that we're talking about another kind of technical, you know, working with the thought and cheta kosha of the mind and a kind of, we hear meditation is a sort of a skill, and we're learning something, and it's rather technical. That's more our age, which is technical and material. It's the age we live in. But anyway, I want to just pass the message that this is not technical at all. This is, in a way, the sutta that the Buddha gave this teaching is, in a way, sacred. It's, in a way, a prayer. But the Buddhist texts, as sacred texts, are not about what happened to the people, like the Bible and the journal, if you like, of a whole people, or many other sacred texts in the world, the Mahabharata, journey with great insight. The Buddhist texts are instructional. Basically, they're like this. Philosophy in the original meaning of the word, loving wisdom. And that's the nature of them. There's 10,000 talks, and they're all guidance. practical in a way, but still sacred. Not stum, not minimal. They open doors. So when I was in Amaravati, the Buddhist monastery in near London, and the monks were singing this sutta of Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, the self. And I was just so fascinated by this. Here is a text talking about, well, how can I exist if I can't control my thoughts? You could say, well, this is philosophy, it's technical, it's... And they were chanting it with worship, with as something really sacred. And it was so lovely to say, yes, this is sacred, because it opens our limited world to much, much bigger world. But the language is question, wisdom language. So I was really touched, and I was actually in tears when I was sitting there with the monk, listening to the monks. So I have a recording of them, and I wanted to play 5-10 minutes of this recording of the monks in Amaravati, where I was, singing the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta. And I invite you, just let it touch the heart. It's good that it's not in English. Because, you know, but you'll know, your words in the Pali will, you'll hear dukkha, you'll hear anicca, you'll hear some words that you know, but it's in Pali. But just get a sense of what it must be like. Imagine these monks, they're given their life, okay? They had a household life. They gave their life. They went to the monastery. And this is what they do in the morning, chanting this sutta about how can there possibly be a self. And if I really know that, awakening happens, the universe will be there instead of the self. So we'll take 5-10 minutes and just flow with it, just let it touch you, close your eyes, let it do what it does.
Ekam samayam bhagava varanasiyam viharati sipatande migadaye dhagrako bhagava panchavakiye bhikkhu ramante sirupam bhikkhave anatta rupam jahidam bhikkhave atta abhave sannayidam rupam abhadaya samvate yalabe tacharupe evam me rupam hotu evam me rupam ma aho siddhya samma chakho bhikkhave rupam anatta tasamma rupam abhadaya samva tatina chala pati rupe evam me rupam hotu evam me rupam ma aho siddhi vedana hanata vedana chahidam bhikkhave atta abhave sannayidam vedana abhadaya samva deya labhe tacha vedanaya evam me vedana hotu evam me vedana ma aho siddhi asamma chakho bhikkhave vedana anatta tasamma vedana abhadaya samva tatina chala pati vedanaya evam me vedana hotu evam me vedana ma aho siddhi sanya anatta sanya chahidam bhikkhave atta abhave sannayidam sanya abhadaya samva deya labhe tata sanyaya evam me sanya hotu evam me sanya ma aho siddhi asamma chakho bhikkhave sanya anatta chala mati sanyaya evam me sanya hotu evam me sanya ma aho siti sankara hanata sankara jahidam bekave hata abave sam sunaidam sankara abadaya sangvate yung labe Sankare suevande sankara hontu evande sankara mahe sundiya samajako pekave sankara hanada dasama sankara abadaya sangvatandina chala pati sankare suevande sankara Devanme Sankara Mahaye Sundi Vinyanam Anata Vinyanam Jahidam Bekave Ataha Bhavesanaidam Vinyanam Abadaya Samvate Yala Bedata Vinyane Evanme Vinyanam Otu Evanme
Samyeso me hata jino hetan bandha
Take a moment to feel the echoes, the resonance inside us. So this sutta and journey is about finding our liberation in closely looking at what it is, the human experience. What is a human, our human experience? What do we do with this experience of being a human being? And the first thing is, we actually have to take responsibility for it. That's not easy. Because our usual mindset is, it's them. Because of them. I am happy, unhappy, liberated, not liberated, free, miserable. There. That. Them. We're always, whatever the them is, it can be a virus, it can be a politics, it can be anything you like, the guys on the other side of the border. So the first thing is take responsibility for the constructions that we're making of this world. Come back home and say, wait a minute, I am making my world through senses, through mind, everything that appears to me, and my experience, that's all I can experience. I can't experience anything other than appearances. Can anyone experience anything else here? If you can, put up your hand. I don't know anything else other than what appears to our senses and our perception and our mind. Right now, you know, we're here together in this. And it's appearing through the senses and whatever's coming in. That's our experience. We take responsibility for that. And when we begin to look carefully, it's not so clear what it is. There's another Pali phrase that says, whatever we think it to be, reality is something other than that. Whatever we think it to be, reality is other than that. It's not that. So we're looking in this meditation, in our practice, in our spiritual life, and I hope it's a life journey and not just a retreat. We're opening this thing called experience, beginning to open it, look at it, this side, that side, unpack it. The five aggregates that you heard in the talk. Rupa, meaning the body, mind, and the world, the materials, ki'ilu materials, of the world and the way they are seeing the world, if you like. Sanna, the perception of things. Vedana, the feeling, the liking, not liking, the push-pull. Sankara, the constructions that we make out of it, the conclusions we make, the memories we have that allow us to say that's this and this is that. Vijnana, the consciousness. That's a way that the 2,500 years ago the Buddha said that's one way of unpacking experience and beginning to look what it's made of. But there's many other ways. The neurology provides many other ways of looking at experience and breaking it to pieces. But what some interesting things happen when we look at experience. One of the interesting things that happens is that whatever we look at tends to disappear. If we look at it long enough, it's an appearance. That means it needs conditions, it needs belief. We make a construction and then we're inside it. It's like we build a house and then we get in there and we say, I'm in a very nice house. What's the house made of? Rocks, stones, blocky roof. We forgot all of that. So it's, if we look at a hand, and this is what we're practicing here with mindful awareness, we look at a hand, a quick look says hand. A deeper look will say, wait a minute, it's a cloud of changing experiences. Every finger is telling us a different story and singing a different song. And it's every finger is singing a different song every minute, another one. More than that, if we listen to the song that the fingers are singing, we no longer see it as a hand, we no longer see it as fingers, we no longer can define what it is, we can't, there's no description that we can say what is that experience exactly. In other words, hand has disappeared, fingers have disappeared, all descriptions have disappeared, we don't know what the hell's going on. What is this thing? I haven't the foggiest idea. Now do that with the self. And that's it, you've done, you can go home. When we look at the self, it just can't find it. It's chakmak. It's, that's already disappearing. That word tells you everything. Just but keep going with it. Adasov. Why it disappears is that, and it's hard to describe it, this, and hard to talk about it in language, and you really need to explore it. The whole teaching of Paticca-samuppada, and I won't go into it now, but let's say that it disappears because there's nothing that stands on its own, that can stand on its own, but everything is the result of other things. The Buddha said, what is a human being? A bunch of daisa walking about. Exactly his words, not my words. We're just a bunch of daisa, a bunch of shivolichawal walking about. Why? Because we're food, we eat, we make a body, and there we are. Only we think we're something else. We are made by things, we are constructed by things, and we make things, and everything is depending on everything else. And so an experience depends on, for example, knowing, toda'a, muda'ut, akara'a, whatever you like to call it, mind, depends on a known, something, object, self, piece of paper, and an observer, someone doing that. So already, in a very simple way, everything we know has already at least three elements that without which nothing can happen, where there is no experience. Without a knower, a knowing, and a known, there's not, where's gone? There's no experience. Like Schrödinger's cat. Until you open the box and you see the cat, it needs an observer, it needs a cat, or something there that's maybe not a cat, but until someone opens the box, then nothing can happen. No observer, no observation, and no cat. So, doesn't exist. So knower, known, and knowing needs to be put together to make anything. Don't want to get into the philosophy of it or the quantum physics of it, but just to show that it needs conditions for anything to exist. Experience depends on many, many conditions. So what about the experience of me? Depends on. And that straight away takes us out of a belief in anatta, non-self. It's not a belief. It's not. Many of your questions in the groups, which are really good questions, and I'm going to relate to one of the main questions that come up again and again in the groups. I'm going to relate to it in the talk at the end. But the question came up, you know, if there's no me, how do I make choices and how can I change things in the world? It needs ambition and it needs a me to want to change things in the world. Absolutely right, except the one problem with that is that it starts with an assumption, if there is no me. But who said there was no me? So it's not that there is no me, it's that we can't find it. That's different. But at this minute, I'm happy to be, if someone tells me you're Stephen, ala kefa. Up to you. I can be Stephen. It's no problem. But Stephen is an option. It's an optional way of looking. Stephen is an option. It's not an absolute. It's an option in many, many ways. Hand is an option. No problem to see a hand. But if you look carefully, you don't know what the hell it is. But it's an option. It's right. It's fine. So, in order to get close to all of this, we are practicing here what I would call flexibility of mind, gemishut. We are asking the mind to come out of its usual tracks. And that's why the story I said the other day about the Israeli flag was a good one, because it shows us straight away the track that we're on. Because chafarnu, we've dug a very deep channel, ta'ala, which goes straight there. Flag, Israeli flag. Immediate. So it just tells us that it's very built, very well. Fine. So flexibility of mind will show us it's just one option to call this a flag, Israeli flag. One option. It's not wrong. We begin to see more options. The consciousness is busy grasping, perception is grasping, sanna, like we heard in grasping things, trying to understand the world. I want to know what this is, I want to know what that is, I want to understand how to function in life. It grasps objects and then it hangs on to them. And that's the strength of the picture, Israeli flag, or me, you. Grasp an object, consciousness, me, and hangs on really strong to that. So it's a very, very strong perception that we have. We don't even like to think that the me might be a thought. We don't like that very much. We want it to be more real than a thought. But it is a thought. It is a response to things. It is a dynamic like everything else. It is an appearance like everything else. It disappears when we go to sleep and we don't cry. Unless we don't go to sleep. And if we look more carefully with flexibility of mind, we see again things, and the self is not a thing, but it's a field, a changing field, a galaxy of impressions, experiences, changing all the time. That's who we are. As the Buddha said, and as many, many Western philosophers also said, we are a galaxy, we are a huge collection of experiences, which we really can't own it. The awareness with which we know all of these itself, we can't define it as anything. We've got language for it, modaud, yidya, yadua, hakara, mind, consciousness, all the awareness, many, every language in Pali, lots, vijnana, many others. But awareness itself, which knows the cloud of experiences called this body, awareness itself that knows this body, we can't find that either. It doesn't really have a nature. It knows things, but it itself is not one thing. I was, you know, I think Ohad will forgive me if I mention that we had a conference a year ago on consciousness with academics from all over the world and many from Israel. It was beautiful, but such a struggle. Such a struggle, because nobody can really say what consciousness is. None of the professors and none of that. It's a huge field, I won't go into it, but it's not that you can have a hook to hang on to, and some of the most wisest voices there said the only way to study consciousness is as it expresses itself, and if you try and understand more than that, get lost. No ground. Fall out, there's no ground under there. No ground. And it's because things create themselves. Things are making themselves out of the conditions. The world is constructing and giving birth to a person, and the person then gives birth to the world. Everything is in loops. Everything is turning on itself. Because we have an eye, we see. But because of the light, we have eyes. So what came first, the eye or the light or the sun or the eye? And which eye? What came first? Where do we go for this? Everything is depending on everything else. There isn't things that stand on their own. The space here, which we take for granted, we won't see anything with it. There won't be objects without space around them. There cannot be. So we, in order to see an object, we need the space around an object. Then we see an object. We're only interested in the object. We're not interested in the space. Well, why is that? Both are equal importance. The light comes in, we don't see the light. We see just what it shines on. Because it shines on a piece of paper, we see paper. Where's the light? I can't see that. I have to believe it, that there's light coming from here. Everything is depending on things. Everything is depending on other things. And what we see is very minimal slice. What we decide to see, what we're trained to see, what we're told is important. To see a person and to see a self, we're told it's important. Along comes the Buddhists and say the self is just a kind of a huge galaxy. Galacti is huge. Self is a community. The body is a community. It's not a thing. And I can't own it. Because it's a community coming from the world. It's all the porridge in the world is in here. Do I own all that? So what helps us is the flexibility of the mind. And it's a big chida. So if we try and stop the chida, the riddle, by saying there is a person or there isn't a person, in both cases, we stopped the mystery. And that's why the Buddha didn't like people that came and said, so you're teaching no self exists? And we don't need to go there because it kills the mystery. And it's the mystery that's interesting for us. There's a quote from Nagarjuna. Nagarjuna is great at throwing this mystery. I mean, everything he writes is just puzzle. But anyone that wants to have a Hebrew translation of Nagarjuna's book, Eviatar Shulman, has translated to Hebrew, and it's very recommended. But I'll just read just two or three lines to give you the taste of the way Nagarjuna helps us to see the impossibility of all of this. Whatever we say, if there's no self, we're stuck. And if we say there is a self, we're also stuck. And this whole book of poems is about undoing all of that. Am I already here before I see and taste and feel and think? But if I'm not here before, how could I see and taste and feel? But how can I know if I'm already here before I taste and think and feel, before I experience, or not already here before I experience something? If I were here without experiences, senses, they wouldn't be here without me. I reveal the senses, and they reveal me. How can I be here without them? But how can they be here without me? If I, to whom all these things belong, cannot be found, so how can everything else be found? I do not come before them, nor am I with them, nor do I become after them. Let go of I am. Let go of I am not. It's very clear. I hope. All of this, again, is not an intellectual exercise. I talked about mental flexibility as being a way of seeing more deeply the mystery of things, the unfindability of things. But it's important to understand that there's a fruit in that. There's a benefit to that, which is that when we reduce the belief in a self-story, then bigger world appears to us. We live in a bigger world. So it's not just that we need to engage with the self in this way as a kind of very interesting exercise. If we become less stuck with the self story here, then things open. The universe, the world, the whole bigger dimensions appear by themselves. It's not that we have to hunt for liberation. It appears, and this is also a very beautiful teaching of the Buddha, it appears when we don't obstruct it. We think we need awakening. Awakening appears when we don't block it. So a lot of the Buddhist teaching is there, is in that place. To unblock the blocks we have to awakening, awakening will appear by itself. And it is mysterious, it isn't easy for the mind to work itself out. It's not into now I know it language. It's not there. I'll give you an example. You all heard of the Heart Sutta. Heart Sutta is perhaps the number one of the Pranaparamita Suttas, the wisdom of the Mahayana wisdom suttas text. And just at the beginning of the Heart Sutta, by the way, is all about the aggregates, just as the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta. We all know form, the one sentence. Form is not other than emptiness. Emptiness is not other than form. But what we don't know unless we read the sutta is that all the aggregates are there. Form, meaning rupa, perception, Vedana, like I said, Vijnana, like the Buddha talked about, the pieces of our experience. In the Heart Sutta also, the pieces of experience. And the Heart Sutta says, if we look at any piece of the experience, there isn't a form there. There is a dialogue between the form and the formless. Just as we did with the hand, there's a dialogue there. We can't say the hand doesn't exist, but if we look carefully enough, we can't find it really. So what does that mean? There's a dialogue between the perception of a hand and perception that goes into everything else. That's so this subtlety, the mind can't really work it out. The mind can't really understand with the ordinary mind that we built from 12 years in Beit Sefer is not going to be able to cope with this stuff. Nagarjuna's poems are there to confuse the ordinary mind so that the ordinary mind just stops and then is opened to a bigger mystery. And this theme of when you look at something, it sort of vanishes. When you look at a self, you can't find it. This is a really important understanding, that the mind, the limits of the mind, which is the main tool we use to cope with things in our life, it has very strong limits. And we need to go beyond that ordinary mind. And that when we go beyond the ordinary mind, things begin to happen. Our life changes. There is more equanimity, there's more joy, there's more other qualities appearing. But going beyond the ordinary mind is not easy. It's not so easy. And it's not everybody's cup of tea either. A lot of people say just... When the Buddha was asked, how do you recognize an enlightened person if you met them in the street? He said, you recognize them, him or her, because you can't find them. You recognize an enlightened person because you can't find them. So the Buddha was asked by this young person asking, well, I don't understand what that means. They exist or they don't exist? And the Buddha said, you're looking right at them, but you don't find them because there's no way that they can be describable in thought or in language. There's no way that you can describe this person in thought or in language. It's what an association comes up to me with the very first retreat, I think, in Israel. Maybe there was one in Stableke at the same time with Dalia Tamir, but maybe this was the first. It was in my house in 1980 something, I can't remember. And it was taught by John Coleman, a Buddhist teacher in the tradition of Goenka. And Rachel, my wife, was sitting this 10 days as well in silence, and it was in my own house. We dismantled the whole house, including the kitchen, for this retreat, and then spent months afterwards building the kitchen again. Anyway, I asked Rachel, so what do you think of John Coleman, the teacher? And she said a beautiful line. She said, when I look at his eyes, I see washing waving on the line, on the kvisa. Washing, because they're kvisa, waving on the chut. Maybe you better say it in Hebrew, because I'm not sure I got it right. How do you say it? Washing, waving in the kvisa, the mefafef, ma? Mitnofefet. Okay. But it's a beautiful expression that she said. I looked in his eyes and I saw washing waving in the wind. And it's this, when you look at it, you can't catch an awakened person because they don't fit any categories that the mind can define. It doesn't fit any. So in the Buddha inside us is like that too. We are the Buddha. And it's that side of us that we cannot define, that is beyond our descriptions of ourselves. There is the Buddha. So what do we do with that? How do we live like that? Certainly it will give us a lot more living with the pliya, with surprise, with wonder, living with amazement. But how do we do things? If my mind is connected to the world, is with things, if I'm not a self sort of a belief in the self that is getting somewhere and doing something and choosing this and deciding to go to university or deciding to get married or to get divorced. I'm with the world. The world and me are one thing, so what do I do? And I think there is a very nice teaching from the Mahayana tradition of Upaya. And I was trying to express it in the groups when this question was asked. So Upaya, the Bodhisattva is kind of image, a man or a woman that realizes all of this and devotes their life to compassionate action in the world. So the question is, how do you devote your life to compassionate action in the world if you don't make decisions, if you're coming from a place of unfindability, can't be found. There's a universal place. So how do you act from a universal place? How do you act in the world from a place of universal place? And the answer is upaya. Upaya is skill, skillfulness. So skill is myumanut, but here we're meaning skill of life, meaning acting from wisdom, like the Bodhisattva would make a change in the world from this place of skillfully knowing how to navigate from a more infinite place into the needs of the world. And one place that is clear, and maybe to all of us, is that the more we are a self dominated by me and my interests and what I want, actually the less effective we are in life. So we know the opposite, that's pretty clear. If someone is dominated by ambitia, I've got to get it, I've got to go there, they're living with stress, they're living with anxiety, they're causing trouble to everybody, they're causing fights in the because they're cheder shel vad menahel of the company. It's disaster. You know the opposite, and you know it with yourself. If you keep measuring out, I got there, I did it, I didn't do it, half did it. Hatzlacha, kishalon, hatzlacha, kishalon, hatzlacha, kishalon. Success, failure, how much pain that causes us. So we know that if we are in the self picture too much, it doesn't help us to act in the world. We'll act for a little bit and then zil, burnout, shchika. We can manage a bit, but... So we are human beings, though, so we do have want to go there and not there, and we want to help and know how to help and not to hurt people. We want to know that, so there is, and we want to go there, so there is a human side to us which needs to be respected, so we can't suddenly become the bodhisattva. Ke'ilu melachoti, artificially become a bodhisattva. We're also human beings, so we're in that between world of we're a human being, and we do need to know how to act wisely, and yet we also have a touch of something much bigger than a human being. So that's the place, and so basically, yes, we can notice intention, that we do want to go, I have an intention to go to university, we can have a matzpen, a compass that says, that's my direction, it's fine, no problem with that, it's much softer than ambition. I must get success, failure, measuring, causes a lot of pain because of the self. The self is causing pain. We're more relaxed about the self, we have a more softer, more open, compassionate self. It's more unknown, more connected to everything else. And we'll find that our need for ambitia, for ambition, goes down. But we will still have direction. So everything gets softer. It's a direction with less measuring, less pressure, less struggle. It has more trust. And what happens instead of ambition and instead of pressure and instead of success and failure dialogue of in our mind, Hatzlacha Kishalom dialogue constantly, and Higati lo Higati, Bacharti lo Ani, Zed Utetov, Zed Pachotov, Utetov, Pachotov, Utetov. What's instead? We replace it with, we offer ourselves as we are. The Bodhisattva promise, the vow, it's called a vow. It's called kazen neder. But the bodhisattva in the Mahayana tradition makes a kind of promise. I give myself to the world. I am the world, I give myself to the world. There's nothing else for me to do. And it's some, we can take a bit of that for as well. We offer ourselves, and what we offer is what our qualities, echuyot, and capacities, and that's what we donate with dana. We give our capacities, our echuyot, to the world, and that's instead of ambitia she ani tzirich legia lasham. Instead of that, we offer what we can, and that's it. And the rest is up to karma. And it's a different attitude. It's coming from here, from the inside, the source. And so if you ask, well, if with less self-story, how do I act in the world? We act from the qualities that are coming to us that we give, the qualities that are coming out of us, whatever they are. So I don't need, at this minute, the quality coming out of me. Firstly, there is an intention to teach. It's a light intention. So I came in my car and came from Glil to here. It's a decision, yes. I went here, not there. It didn't matter so much, but a light decision was made. And then the rest of it is just giving what is right. The qualities now of my voice or my wisdom is coming out because it's the situation. I have an invitation. The retreat is an invitation. It's just coming. I don't need ambition. I have to do the best talk, and it's got to be right. And if it's fail, you know, one of my teachers said to me one time, to be a good teacher in the Dharma is not to give the best talk you ever given, but if you give the worst talk that you ever gave in your life, you have no more thoughts about it. Ein machshavot. It's a lovely way of looking beneath success and failure. You're just giving what you can give. That's a different attitude. And that's the attitude that goes with a much more a sense of less me, the center of everything and center of action in the world. So that's, with that I'm going to stop, and we'll have 2 or 3 minutes of quiet. Thank you.